You've probably heard by now that today is the 50th birthday of Barbie, which tells you something about the important role the doll has played in American culture. Excuse me. But it hasn't always been easy for the iconic teenage doll or for Mattel, the company that created her. Jerry Oppenheimer tells the inside story of the world's largest toy company in his latest book, Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel. It's published by Wiley. I'm very pleased it has brought Jerry Oppenheimer to the show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And that title, Toy Monster, Big Bad World, does Mattel, the company that markets so many kids' favorites, not only Barbie, but Chatty Cathy, Hot Wheels, He-Man, the American Girl dolls, does it have a dark side?
Well, it does have a dark side. The title, in fact, really relates to the enormous, huge company it is. I mean, it sells its toys and its products in 140 countries, so it really meant to represent, the title means to represent the tentacles that Mattel has all over the world. At the same time, there is a dark side. I initially decided to write this book mainly because of what was happening in 2007. Millions of Mattel toys had been recalled from China, mainly because of lead paint as a result of a manufacturing issue in China. At the same time, there was a design problem issue, and that involved small magnets being put into one of Mattel's very popular toys called Polly Pocket. And that was actually more dangerous than the issue of the lead paint. Children were swallowing these tiny magnets. It was causing severe damage. I document in the book cases of children who were severely injured. So not only is it about the corporate culture, but it is about the current state of affairs at Mattel.
But to some degree, it sounds like the sort of thing we've seen in some of the pharmaceutical companies. Mattel knew there were problems in both those areas before they ever led on.
Mattel had a theory that they could police themselves. The actual organization that deals with corporations like Mattel and the issues of safety is the Consumer Product Safety Commission. What was revealed during the 2007 toy terror issue was that the Consumer Product Safety Commission for the entire country had one toy tester. There were questions of conflicts of interest between leaders of the Consumer Product Safety Commission taking trips on the expense account of toy companies like Mattel and other companies.
And you say that they have to negotiate with companies before a recall can be initiated.
The public has received some bad information about the whole recall situation. One expects that if a toy has a problem, it's going to be instantly recalled. In fact, that's really a public relations gimmick in a way. The company and Consumer Product Safety have to negotiate how the recall is going to be announced. That could last for a couple of months. At the same time, Mattel felt it could police itself. So there was a major issue there.
How many of these toys that needed to be recalled were being manufactured in China?
The toys that had the lead paint were being manufactured in China. The toys with the magnets were being manufactured in China, except that was a design issue performed by Mattel in the United States. And Mattel buried the magnet issue under the lead paint issue. And that was the more dangerous issue, the magnets.
How many recalls were there altogether?
About 20 million, which is extraordinary.
Wow. That had to have cost Mattel a lot of money.
Cost Mattel a lot of money. And the most recent revelations are that there is about a billion toys still out in the marketplace that haven't been recalled.
And some of them are probably being sold at flea markets and the
eBay.
Like.
eBay.
The owner of Lee Durr, the company that manufactured the lead-tainted toys, ended up committing suicide, didn't he?
Committed suicide. There was a lot of controversy that I uncovered that Mattel publicly told the news media that Lee Durr, the manufacturer, was responsible for this, taking the blame off of Mattel itself. He committed suicide. Thousands of his employees were forced out of jobs. And then Mattel actually went to China and apologized to China, causing a great controversy.
They apologized because they realized that they weren't taking full responsibility?
They apologized mainly because they needed China, and they needed the Chinese manufacturers to produce their toys. So it was a political reason on their part.
And yet, Mattel hasn't really suffered from all the negative publicity, has it?
Well,
I mean, people don't go to the store and say, oh, this is a Mattel toy, I better not buy it.
In fact, they do. The 2007 toy recall changed the minds of parents around the world and placed a dark cloud over the Mattel Toy Company, which was so trusted by generations of parents. So it did have an effect. The other big effect is the economy now.
On the other hand, Mattel just opened its first Barbie store in Shanghai.
Amazing, yes.
Because China may be the only market that they can really do well in these days?
Barbie, now that she's hit 50 and is prepared to get her AARP card, has lost a lot of the market share. That has to do with the competition from the Bratz dolls, which I'm sure we'll deal with in this discussion. She's hit 50 now. I don't know how much of a future she really has. Mattel has already said that it plans to do a revamping of her look. They've tried that twice in the past unsuccessfully.
My guest is Jerry Oppenheimer, whose latest book is Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel, published by Wiley. You call Jack Ryan the father of Barbie, but Ruth Handler is the person who everybody associates with Barbie. What happened there?
There was a myth perpetrated by Ruth Handler. She was one of the co-founders of Mattel with her husband, Elliot Handler.
And she named Barbie after her daughter, Barbara, didn't she? Well, Ken after her son, Ken?
There was a book that she wrote, an autobiography called Dream Doll. That book was written by her with a journalist, and in that book she kind of set in stone the fact that she was responsible for everything to do with Barbie. And over the years, other journalists writing about the doll, writing books about the doll, have given credence to Ruth Handler. When I went in to write this book and started doing research, I kept being told by people I tracked down who worked at Mattel in the early years, it wasn't Ruth Handler. It was Jack Ryan, who was this brilliant engineer who graduated from Yale.
Designed missiles for the Pentagon.
He worked for Raytheon, designed missiles for the Cold War Pentagon, found an opportunity. He was very entrepreneurial, found an opportunity with Mattel in the mid-50s. And Ruth Handler's role really is the fact that she felt that there should be a more adult doll on the marketplace, a doll with breasts, in fact. And she would watch her daughter playing with cutout dolls and thought this was necessary. She went on a trip to Europe, found a doll called Bild Lilly, which was a German adult novelty doll, brought it back, gave it to Jack Ryan, and he brought Barbie to birth.
There's an op-ed piece in today's Times about a young woman in Iran who got a Bild Lilly, I guess it was in the 50s, and didn't know what to do with it because it was an adult. And then later, when she was an adult, she bought the doll for her kid, and they both enjoyed playing with it. A listener left a comment on our show page, says, I know it's fun to mock Barbie and her impossible body, but she deserves some respect. She was the very first career doll. She gave little girls an opportunity to dream beyond motherhood. To this day, she's always attempting new jobs, being a vet, being a pilot, being a rock star, etc.
Yes, I think that's true. But there is a faction. There are various factions in the Barbie world. One faction is what you just stated, that she's been wonderful for little girls and she has all these careers and children want to grow up and emulate Barbie. Well, the other side, and it's been a feminist view, is that Barbie has been negative for little girls. And that's been the biggest criticism, that little girls grow up thinking they should have bodies like her, thinking they should have all of the clothing and the Corvette and the fancy car. And that's been a big negative.
Because her thin, unnaturally proportioned body has given false expectations about their bodies. So we've heard a lot of eating disorders as a direct result of kids trying to emulate Barbie?
Eating disorders. One of the
Breast
enhancement. One of the anecdotes I have in my book is that Jack Ryan, who I designate as the father of Barbie, would actually change through plastic surgery, which he didn't perform himself, many of his girlfriends to look like Barbie. And in one case, he was married to a young woman who, in order to win his love, became anorexic and actually died of a heart attack in her efforts to look like Barbie and to please him.
Now, you say he has some pretty serious psychological problems. The book opens with some of his sexual escapades. This is a man who had five wives.
Five wives.
God knows how many mistresses. One of his wives was Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Now, many people assume that she'd had plastic surgery before she married Jack Ryan.
Well, I would assume that Zsa Zsa had plastic surgery for all nine of her husbands over the years. But that was a very difficult relationship for Ryan, and he quickly divorced her after a short period of time.
But it is I wonder if people knew the story of Jack Ryan and that they would think, oh, this is the right man to head a toy company for kids.
I think one of the big breakthroughs in my book is the fact that I turn the Ruth Handler story 180 degrees. Jack Ryan was a brilliant designer.
He allowed her to bend at the waist.
He held all the patents on Barbie. He developed the bendable waist, the bendable legs. One of the most important attributes to Barbie for little girls who could make her more realistic. He held 1,000 patents in his lifetime, and the Handlers and Mattel and Ryan battled constantly. They were against his lifestyle. Moreover, they made a deal with him when he signed up to give him a huge royalty on every patent that came through Mattel. So at one point in time, they cut off the royalties. He sued them. A 10-year battle ensued, never went to trial. And in the end, Jack Ryan committed suicide.
Well, he had other reasons, perhaps, to be depressed. He was bipolar, and he had all these sexual obsessions. So he was a messed-up guy. Was he responsible for coming up with all the different careers that Barbie had?
I think that was more of the marketing division at Mattel. Mattel had a theory, and it's the Gillette razor theory. You know, buy the doll for $3 and then buy every accessory and dress down the line. And that really was what generated so much revenue for the company.
So start up with one blade and then do it to two blades and then do it to three blades.
You have the doll, but you have to keep buying the accessories.
But having a doll named after you wasn't always such a good idea. I don't know what happened to Barbara, the Ruth Handler's daughter, but I understand that being named for the Ken doll didn't turn out so well for the real Ken.
One thing in terms of Barbara, who was the daughter of the Handlers, she was never called Barbie as a kid. And as I discovered in doing my research on Jack Ryan, his wife's name was Barbara at the same time they were developing the doll. So there's a debate over which person is Barbie.
Otherwise, we might have the Zsa Zsa doll.
Exactly.
Now, how did Mattel get started? Oh, I was asking about Ken. What happened to Ken?
So there was the Ken doll, which was brought out 2 years after Barbie. Again, that was Jack Ryan, who felt that Barbie should have a boyfriend. And the Handlers had a son named Kenneth Handler. Ken grew up hating and despising Barbie and the Ken doll. For one thing, the Ken doll had no form of genitalia, whereas the Barbie doll had breasts. Ken grew up being harassed by his friends. As an adult, he was ashamed of all the riches that that Barbie and Ken had brought to the Handler family. He totally broke away from the family. And he married. He had three children. But he also had a secret life. And in the early 90s, Ken was diagnosed tragically, sadly, with AIDS. Around the same time that happened, Mattel had brought out a doll that had become an icon for gay men. It was, you know, dressed in a very flamboyant way. It had an earring in its ear. And but this was all by coincidence. And there was a great outcry from church groups, parents, that they did not want to see a gay Ken. All of that was happening at the same time, and when he passed away, that's when Mattel pulled the doll off the market shelf.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did Mattel get started?
Interesting story. The Handlers came from Eastern European immigrant roots. They had very little education. Elliot Handler had a very creative bent. He was an artist. Ruth was a tough, hard-nosed businesswoman. At age 10, she was working in one of her family's drugstores. And they both got married at a young age, moved out to California, and decided they wanted to get into business. And that business, starting in a garage, became Mattel right after World War II. They started making toys. The big help for them was they were approached by a little-known TV show called The Mickey Mouse Club and said, if you advertise on here, you know, you're going to be big. And they advertised on there. They used practically all of their net worth at the time. They put one of the first toys was a burp gun, it was called, and it just sold, you know, to use the cliche, like hotcakes or burp guns. And that was it. And that was around the same time Ryan came aboard, the same time Ruth had discovered this Build Lily doll.
And then Ryan made it into something.
And it became an international company.
And they were larger than life characters. Another one is Jill Barad.
Jill Barad is an interesting character. She was described by many people I interviewed as a real life Beverly Hills Barbie princess. Very glamorous woman with great marketing abilities. And during her tenure, her watch, she really grew the Barbie brand. She brought out the Barbie collectible line, et cetera, et cetera. But she was an odd character also. She would not promote a woman to an executive position unless the woman looked glamorous like she did. She would fire and hire on a whim. And her career totally went down the tube when she made what was considered one of the worst acquisitions in history. It was a software company that apparently Mattel, nor her, nor any of the members of the board of directors did their D&D. And it was a great loss. It almost brought Mattel to its knees, and she was fired with a $50 million golden parachute, which is typical of Mattel. So many people are forced out for incompetence, for not being as popular as they should be with the brass, but they walk away with big amounts of money. It's sometimes better to be fired from Mattel than hired.
My guest is Jerry Oppenheimer, who's written 8 biographies of famous Americans, Martha Stewart, Barbara Walters, the Clintons, the Kennedys. Now he has written about a company, Mattel. The book Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel, is published by Wiley. You say that the company has had its share of scandals, like when Ruth Handler was accused of cooking the books.
The mid-70s come along, and Mattel has been the fair-haired child of Wall Street. It was a public company. Every year they were making huge profits. The Wall Street boys were happy. The stockholders were happy. But in the early to mid-70s, there was a downturn. Barbie wasn't selling well. Hot Wheels suddenly was stacked to the ceiling in stores. It was not selling. And she decided, along with several other executives, to basically try to make the earnings of Mattel look better than they actually were, basically cooking the books. She was investigated by the SEC, by federal prosecutors, and denied ever doing anything wrong. 8 months later, she pleaded no contest to all these charges, was fined $57,000, ousted from the company, faced community service to avoid prison, and was out of this company, the company she had founded.
But that was the worst crisis before the recalls, I'd imagine.
Well, over the years, there have been a number of whistleblowers within the company who were claiming the same kind of things, that earnings were being claimed to be higher than they actually were. This has been kind of a leitmotif of some of the CEOs.
So what happened to Ruth after she left the company?
After she left the company, she kind of separated completely from Mattel. She started another company, which during the time of the investigation, she actually sadly learned that she had breast cancer, had a breast removed, a mastectomy, and decided in the marketplace there weren't the proper kind of breast forms for women who have suffered from breast cancer and lost breasts. She started another company, and overnight that became a huge success. She really did help women who suffered from breast cancer.
How's Barbie doing these days? How is she doing in competition with the Bratz dolls?
Not well. Barbie started suffering from a lack of popularity among little girls, I would say, in the early 90s. Around the time, a small company called MGA Entertainment brought out a dog called Bratz. And Bratz became very popular for a number of reasons. One, the main one was the fact that little girls' tastes had changed. Barbie seemed outdated to them, but Bratz was popular because the Bratz dolls kind of emulated the tabloid train wrecks that these kids were, contemporary kids were familiar with, the Paris Hiltons, the Britney Spears, the Lindsay Lohans, and left, Barbie in their wake. And this, this past year was this enormous, expensive trial, Bratz versus Barbie out in California. And that's still dragging on. It appears that Mattel has somewhat won the case, but there's still negotiations going on.
Now, Mattel also has the American Girl dolls. They have Hot Wheels. They have Fisher-Price.
Yes, they do.
So that sounds like a successful situation.
Mattel's stock has dropped dramatically. A lot of it has to do with the economy. A lot of it has to do with the controversy over Barbie, the Bratz case. And what's happening now is the economy in China is like ours. And so they're losing manufacturing ability. And I just think that...
But American Girl dolls are doing well.
Yeah, American Girl dolls are doing well. And Fisher-Price toys are doing well. But again, from the recalls in 2007, there were Fisher-Price toys recalled, and parents started going to small toy manufacturers to buy wooden toys that were made here in this country that they felt were safer.
You quote one executive saying that Mattel is a shark pond. Now, is that just true of Mattel, or is that true of the toy industry in general?
I think it's true of the toy industry in general. I mean, specifically, this person who I interviewed knew what a backstabbing operation Mattel was, highly competitive among the personnel. But I think, in many ways, Mattel is like any other huge, enormous corporation where, you dive in and you either survive or you're out.
Several other companies have had problems with products that were made in China, from pet food to toothpaste. Have other toy companies had the same sorts of safety problems that Mattel has had?
Yes. And in fact, those toys also dealt with the magnet issue. But what's interesting is when I did my research on Mattel, I went back many, many years and found out that they had dangerous toys over the years. One was a toy that was called Incredible Edibles. And one of their chemists in the Mattel lab discovered that there was a mixture you could make where kids could make little molds of little animals and swallow them. Well, what was happening was children with diabetes were eating these toys and was causing severe problems for them. So those toys had to be recalled. The Jack in the Box, which was a Mattel toy, had a defective spring. At least one boy was blinded. So, yes, the history of dangerous toys with Mattel and other companies go back many, many years.
As I mentioned earlier, you have written biographies of some pretty famous people. This is your first divergence from that?
It is my first. I, as you had said, I've written many books about iconic Americans, and I felt that this time I really wanted to write about an iconic institution. And I felt that Mattel has catered to generations of children and parents and just fit the bill. At the same time, the 2007 toy terror was happening. And that's really what got me interested in looking specifically at Mattel. What was happening with these toys? Why were they dangerous? Why were they defective? Once I got into the story and discovered this hugely curious cast of characters, I was hooked.
Are you going to go back to individuals, or are you hooked now on doing this kind of thing?
I'm actually working on an individual now.
I'm not going to ask you who,
please.
Because I understand that these are the sorts of trade secrets that can really hurt you. Somebody else say, oh, gee, Jerry Oppenheimer is writing about Paris Hilton. Maybe I should do a book.
They are. But this is not of the celebrity genre. It's someone different.
We also want to alert you to the fact that we have a link to a great segment that Studio 360 did on Barbie. That's on our show page at WNYC.org. This is not just about Barbie, but it is about the people who gave us Barbie, and Barbie is so important to the story of Mattel. It's called Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel. My great thanks to Jerry Oppenheimer for being with us today. By the way, the book is published by Wiley.